On this episode of Chicago Writes, Janet Sutherland Madden has written an adorable children's book titled Rhett, The Kind Little Corgi. We dive into the writing and explore cross-marketing for authors and more. Coming up, I'm your host, W.C. Turk. I've got a lot to get to, and I'm really excited to talk to you and talk about this book. So let's get right into it. What do you say?
That sounds like a plan.
I'm gonna start off with this. Let me offer a bit of news. I've been talking about TikTok as a vehicle for book and author promotion. This is still developing, but as of the recording of this program today, this is from a story by Riley Began and Ken Tran. And Janet, I'd love your thoughts on this a little bit. We won't spend a lot of time on it, but
sure.
That would be great. USA Today, March 13th, 2024, quote, the House approved a bill Wednesday that would force TikTok's parent company to sell the popular social media app,
right,
face a practical ban in the U.S. President Joe Biden has said that he would sign it if it makes it to his desk, but the legislation's fate is uncertain in the Senate, where the bill has proved much more divisive. The bill cleared the House at 352-65, with one member voting present. The legislation proponents argue the app poses national security risks because its parent company, ByteDance, is based in Beijing and may expose American user data to Chinese government surveillance. Like all those twerking and club kids makeup videos, right, Janet?
Right. That's a danger.
Yes. So I wanted to take a stab at this through an author's perspective. I set up a TikTok page as an experiment based on some conversations with David W. Berner and some other authors, in which we were all looking at the promotional opportunities for TikTok and TikTok videos.
Sure.
And it's just a way of zeroing in on you and your story and building an author readership that way. You know, we're always, as authors, we're always looking for promotional ideas. And I wonder if you have had an experience with TikTok as an author, and if you have any thoughts on it.
I actually have not dipped my toe into TikTok because I was concerned with the hacking and all that kind of thing.
Sure.
Because I don't know if you were aware that I was hacked on Facebook massively. I was hacked so bad that I had to go to the police department.
Oh,
and
my God.
My Instagram was quickly hacked, like bing, bang, bang, bang. Mm. And I found the hacker, and she actually was able to get money from all my Facebook friends. I had 1,800
wow.
Facebook friends. I'm down now to 800.
Oh.
And so I am really leery to any kind of social media apps because I wasn't able to get any help from Facebook.
Yeah.
And Instagram, I slowly got back on Instagram. So I just thought, I don't even know if I want to even go to TikTok.
Yeah.
But they're both great. They're all great tools for authors. I still have read The Kind Little Corgi on Instagram, but I can't get back into it because of the hacking. So I'm really kind of anxious to tap into TikTok, but now I saw this and I thought, oh, I don't even know if I want to do that now because I had a horrible experience with hacking.
And therein lies maybe one of the largest issues regarding social media is it's a great platform for undercapitalized,
right,
entrepreneurs, which is what every author and artist is, right?
Right. Exactly.
So to promote themselves and build that much needed capital, but there's that opportunity for abuse. A photographer friend of mine, Timothy Hyatt, recently had some health issues, and you know, I get these fundraiser notifications all the time. So before I posted that, I reached out directly to Timothy and confirmed that it was him. And then I posted that on my Facebook so people knew that it was legit. You know, within a fairly short amount of time, he was well on his way to that goal for his, you know, for helping with his medical bills. And we relied on that when I had my stroke 2 years ago. You know, we just got hit from every direction. Transportation costs, which you can understand. We'll talk about that more in a little bit. But this is really the ideal platform for those undercapitalized or those entrepreneurs and authors and artists who aren't connected with a big publishing house or a large gallery and are kind of doing it from, you know, the grassroots perspective on their own, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you have to police these things on your own.
Yeah.
And you're hung out to dry if you don't. So, I mean, I literally had to, I mean, the fact that I had to go to a police department and deal with that. And just now the Facebook page for Rhett, the Kind Little Corgi, was hacked, you know, some crazy person put some porn on. So just for an entrepreneur, you have to do your own, you know, policing and fundraising, you know, just
caveat emptor, buyer beware.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. So it's really challenging, you know, and that's why when I heard the TikTok, I thought, well, you know, I guess I'm not going to hit that one for my book. But, you know, I understand it after going through Facebook. I felt super helpless for that. And losing 1,000 Facebook friends who were really would be integral part of marketing the book and just absolute friends and connections. And, you know, and I received no support from Facebook. It was just frustrating.
And that becomes a stain on your reputation, which is really maybe the largest crime in all that, right?
Yes, it was horrible. I actually picked up the phone and said, "Hey, I'm not asking you for money. I'm not asking you for money." And I actually had long distance friends say, "Do you need help?" I said, "What are you talking about? Do you need money?" I said, "No, I don't need money. I, you know," it was really embarrassing that, you know, people were, but it was nice. But I just thought, oh my gosh, this is horrible. So I had to do a lot of backpedaling and PR for myself personally. And then for me as an author. And I thought this, I just don't have time. And this is horrible, you know, and.
Well, you know, I'm going to factor that into our conversation a little bit later when we get to the marketing portion of this conversation. But Rhett, the Kind Little Corgi, why did you feel the need to discriminate against the lowly dachshund or the shih tzu or America's dog, the bloodhound, Janet Sutherland Madden?
Oh, come on. Because I have my own little corgi and actually the poor little corgi is locked into the bedroom right now. But yeah, it's my own little corgi here. He's just, you know, quite honestly, me and my late husband, we came up with this story because it was the reaction to COVID. You know, we wrote this book because we thought he's acting like, what's going on here? Why are their kids home during the day? And why is daddy home during the day? And, you know, and why are we standing outside in the winter waving up to the window at Aunt Anna? This is a very odd situation. So it was the dog's reaction. You know, everyone's talking about how everyone reacted during COVID, but the dog was the one that was responding like, well, you people are crazy, you know?
Well, it's not just about COVID. I've read this book now 3 times. And I don't think that I was your target audience necessarily, but we're gonna talk about that a little bit as well. First of all, let me just say, welcome to Chicago Writes, the podcast of the Chicago Writers Association. Yeah. It's been a while.
Yeah.
I thought you were setting a trend with your aneurysm, so I went ahead and had a stroke 2 years ago. But seriously, I found nose over toes inspired my recovery. I was thinking about the book all throughout my rehabilitation and recovery and even lately.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, I think that's the power of a good memoir, is that we don't necessarily realize the resonance that it can have in someone else's life, right?
Yes, that was my goal. Yeah. You know, I mean, literally, you go through such a nightmare. You just hope that there's a reason and that it helps someone, you know, and that was what my dad and my mom had hoped that the book would have the impact and help people. My dad used to carry that notepad in his pocket. And I used to say, come on, take that stupid thing out. My mom would say, Don, why are you carrying that notepad? Well, he kept every piece of information, you know.
What a blessing. What a blessing. So let me set the stage a little bit better here. After recovering from a brain aneurysm in 2004 that left her blind and paralyzed, Janet Sutherland Madden turned her energies towards lobbying and fundraising for the Brain Aneurysm Foundation. Her astounding book of trauma, which we were just talking about, and the courage to overcome is titled Nose Over Toes, and is available at Eckhart's Press.com. It's also available on Amazon, right?
Amazon, right.
Yep, yes. Yep. A reminder of how devastating and debilitating the aneurysm was. Janet, rather than take up all of our time with all the newspaper and radio stations and media that you've worked for, I'm just going to list the two on the planet that you haven't worked for yet, like the Andersonville Flyer, and I think the Indonesian Fly Fisherman Quarterly, right?
Yeah, didn't I miss those.
But you've heard or seen her work in the Sun Times, Daily Herald, CBS, CNN, Fox, as well as locally here on WMAQ, WLS, WGN, and KMOX, UPI Radio, and 75 plus radios, radio stations on the Illinois and Wisconsin radio networks.
Right.
Sutherland Madden's new book is Rhett, The Little Corgi. The Kind Little Corgi from Eckhart's Press, which was an Amazon best-selling title. Her website is JanetSutherlandMadden.com. And for more information on brain aneurysms, the website is BAFound, that's all one word, lowercase, .org. And don't worry, I'll post it in the notes below. And I can't imagine a better person to tell us about the book than Rhett himself. But as Rhett is currently unavailable, Janet, please do us the honor and tell us a little bit more about Rhett and the Corgi. We'll be right back with more from Janet Sutherland Madden, but first, a few of the literary events taking place around Chicagoland and beyond. Calling all poets. This from our friend and critically acclaimed author, David W. Berner. Whispered Word Press is looking for submissions for their Whispered Word Poetry. All short poems will be considered for at Whispered Word Poetry on Instagram and for our upcoming poetry chapbook. They always encourage new authors to submit. You can submit poems at writershedpress.com or visit writershedpress.com. That's writershedpress.com/submissions. Don't forget, events like the solar eclipse on April 8th are perfect inspiration for writers from the poetic, spiritual, the crazy, sublime, historic, short story, the magical, and mystical, or as a dramatic backdrop. These events punctuate ideas for the writer and the storyteller. Pour One Out will be returning to Volumes Book Cafe, 1373 North Milwaukee Avenue in Chicago, on Wednesday, April 10th. The event starts at 7 p.m. You don't want to miss this group of tellers. Join us for an evening of vulnerable and engaging storytelling at the virtual space. Pour One Out, produced and hosted by Ada Chang, features strong and unique voices. We build community through intimacy and vulnerability. We are committed to cultivating and developing new tellers as we bring tellers of all experience levels together. We strive for equitable inclusion and representation. We consistently give space to new talents. Educator turned artist, storyteller, and creator, Dr. Ada Chang, has utilized storytelling to illustrate structural inequities, raise critical awareness, and build intimate communities. She's committed to amplifying and uplifting marginalized voices and has created numerous storytelling platforms for BIPOC and LGBTQIA community members to tell difficult and vulnerable stories based on their lived experiences. Visit volumesbooks.com/event/pour-one-out. We'll bring you more events throughout the program, but now back to my conversation with Janet Sutherland Madden.
Rhett the Kind Little Corgi is actually, there's a soft cover, but there's a hardcover as well. And the hardcover, the cover I should give our photographer, Jean Lachey. She's wonderful. And KP Lynn did a lot of the illustration. She's an award-winning, international award-winning person.
How much I'm sorry to interrupt, but how much time did the photographer have to spend with her subject? Or is that dog just cute all the time and it's impossible to take a great picture?
He will sit still and pose. He's literally ridiculous.
Yeah, I get that. Yeah.
Yeah. He's a total ham, and you'll be like, pose, and he'll pose. He's ridiculous. So so Rhett the Kind Little Corgi started because I had another dog named Andrew J, and we thought that Rhett would be a perfect story because he really lit up the room. And all corgi, people love corgis. I'm sorry about the dachshunds and all the others, but people love corgis because they have these 2-inch legs. They run around. They have this heart butt. If you ever notice this heart butt and this little stump like bunny rabbit tail. But Rhett the Kind Little Corgi was the genesis because we thought, you know, this dog seems to brighten up everyone's room. My Aunt Anna, she's in a nursing center, but he would jump on her lap and she would make him really happy. She has dementia. And she just made everyone happy. Both of my parents were dying from cancer, and he would just go and visit them and make them very happy. My father would lie on the floor, and he would lie on the floor too and do exercises with my father. So it just became very funny. And then my nieces were afraid of dogs. But when he ran into the room, they were like, oh, this dog isn't bad. And then quickly when we adopted him and they met him, my brother said, when can we babysit him? And I said, your kids don't like him. They don't like dogs. They said, we love him. When can we babysit him? I'm like, are you kidding? He goes, no, we love him. So he has this really great personality that everyone loves him. It's a very strange thing. Even the people in my condo building were like, shut that dog off, you know, make him quit barking and he's poops all around. And then they were like, then the dog walker walks in, all the dog people in the building go, hi, Rhett. And I thought, oh my gosh. So he has this automatic love that everyone likes him. He's got this personality, and even the maintenance guys come and they were like, hi, Rhett. So he's got this incredible personality, and he does have this ability to make everyone feel good. Even the kids, and they request him at holidays. And so it's a great element to write a story when we were at, you know, use COVID to explain how the dog reacted, you know, the empty, you know, how the world was empty, but Rhett noticed it and that kind of a thing. But then I thought, you know, I like writing and I want my nieces to understand writing. I want kids to appreciate writing, and maybe we can use the book to encourage writing and that kind of a thing. I mean, I already have my niece writing books. It's really funny. They'll write a book. And
So people get books written about them all the time. Why not the critters who are integral parts of our family? There's an extraordinary amount of empathy in this book, which comes through right away. And that's why I think this takes it out of sort of a period vignette about COVID and opens it up to a much more important story for children and their parents, presumably reading this to them. 4 to 8 years old, I'm guessing that is the bracket that you were targeting, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
See, that empathy came from my late husband, Kevin, because he was a nurse and he was stuck. He was stuck at home because of COVID and it was driving him bonkers. And I came up with the idea of writing a book because he was really frustrated that he couldn't work and he had nurses that were stuck at home and, you know, people that weren't, he was watching people dying from COVID and he was really upset. So I thought, let's write this book. And the empathy exuded from Kevin's idea, you know, we need to be more empathetic. And so that's where that came from. And I think that's what he really wanted people to understand. We have this COVID, and this is very important.
Indeed. Yeah, and I can see how this would. So just the photography of this dog, let alone the story, and the way that you render the story from Rhett's point of view, lends this joie de vivre, this joy and this happiness that I almost didn't notice. COVID, the COVID. The COVID right. Subtext to the story.
Right. We were going to try and have someone draw or do an illustration. And it was decided that no, the pictures told the story better than any pictures, you know, that were drawn. And I was thinking maybe a second book is needed only because Red has helped me grieve. It's just mm-hmm. astonishing. And so I took some pictures.
Well, I was going to ask you if you were looking at this as kind of a series of sort of keeping us updated on what Rhett's going through from day to day and week to week and month to month.
Yeah, because he literally has helped me grieve from the death of my husband. And he literally has been amazing. You know, they say dogs can tell when you're hurting and when you're sick and this and that. Yeah. And he can totally tell. And he's been amazing. So I thought, oh, this might not be a bad idea. He is a rescue dog, and they say rescue dogs are very special, but he is very special as well. And, you know, he can sense there's something wrong and he gets very nervous. And, you know, he's a great dog. I do recommend corgis, but I think other rescue dogs, any kind of rescue animals. I should mention the portion of the proceeds of the sale of the book goes to PAWS, because rescue animals are very important.
We love PAWS. Our last dog was, we always described him as a lab on top and a corgi on the bottom, because he had these short little corgi legs. He was half corgi.
Oh my gosh.
Yes. But he was,
love it.
He was essentially a full-size lab on top. He just had these tiny little legs, right?
Yes.
And then he passed away rather suddenly. About a year, almost exactly a year ago now. And we gave another home from PAWS. We gave another home to our current dog, Millie. And her loyalty and temperament and sweetness is, you know, beyond measure, as you can certainly testify to Rhett. I fully believe that that's part of the rescue culture.
Yes.
Yeah.
It really is. And interestingly, my last corgi was raised by a couple that raised therapy dogs. And this is right when I came out of my brain aneurysm. I was walking with the cane and everyone was against it. But this dog knew when I should take my meds and all that kind of a thing. And I thought, wow. And I ran into this couple later. I said, this is the therapy dog, right? They said, yeah, we didn't want to tell you. And I thought, oh, you know, perfect timing. And my mom and I just couldn't believe it. It was just amazing. So,
all right. So let's talk about the writing of the book, and then we'll finish up with the marketing just a little bit. And just for reference, I'll be using How to Write a Children's Book from johnfox.com. That's sort of a sub. It's a smaller subset of writing in general, right? So he starts off with how to generate a concept that works. It's not easy to come up with a unique concept, particularly for kids books. I think you nailed it. But you really need to research the market if that's your intention. We have a lot of writers who are seat of the pants writers, and I think that extends also to the marketing and strategy side, that people kind of just do what feels right and what they know works. You had a lot of journalism in your background. What kind of strategy Did you employ, or did you just have a hunch that Rhett would work?
Well, I do have a lot of marketing in my background.
Yes.
And I have sales too, so that helped. I went into a big bookstore, a big box bookstore. I walked around, went into the children's bookstore, sat there, looked around, and then turn on the TV. What kind of dogs do you see? You see corgis, number one. Okay. And I was just like, okay, that is an obvious. So, and I should preface this by saying nose over toes. When I pitched that book, by the way, I did the absolute query letter and the whole shebang proposal. So that should be kind of impressive. I did that to Eckhart Press and they were like, whoa, yeah, we'll take it. You know, it was really kind of funny. I worked with someone to put together a proposal, a marketing plan. So I knew when I did the Rhett the Kind Little Corgi, I needed a marketing plan. You know, I knew ahead of time I needed a marketing plan. I need to put together who's my audience, all that kind of a thing. And I knew in advertising and sales, I knew how to put together a marketing plan and who's my target audience, that kind of a thing. And so I already had done that when I walked into a couple different places that I thought I wanted them to carry my book, not like Target or some of the others, although they are carrying, but I thought I should go into some of the local stores and see what they're carrying because I wanted to hit some local stores and libraries. And I noticed that one of the local stores was carrying corgi stuffed toys. I'm like, I go, hey, I'm working on a book. It's with the corgi. I think you could sell that with my book. Yeah, can we do that in the spring? I go, yeah, we can. So,
cross marketing.
Right. So I thought, okay, good. So I'm working and talking to people, and I have a friend of mine who's a good salesperson, and she kind of knocked door to door, and we looked and talked to people as well. And so I knew how to go door to door, knock on doors. And I did a lot of research in terms of going to bookstores, looking what sells, and then saw advertising on TV and saw what was hot in terms of dogs. I actually looked at what the top dogs were, corgis. So, and I already knew that, but you know, that's kind of how I did marketing. So that's how I did my marketing.
Probably going directly to bookstores and maybe talking with the staff, with the management, the sales is maybe the best marketing research that you can do. In the next segment, Janet talks about a brilliant marketing strategy of cross-marketing. Stay tuned. On Friday, April 12th, can we tell you a story? The 33rd annual DePaul Law Review Symposium will focus on the power of legal storytelling. Discussions will span from analyzing argumentation and screenwriting methods to forms of advocacy and persuasion in the law to using film and television adaptations to convey important legal and ethical messages. This year's symposium will feature a range of keynote speakers and a panel discussion allowing renowned legal scholars, academic practitioners, and leaders in the field of legal narrative to discuss using storytelling skills and tactics effectively in legal practice. The 33rd Annual DePaul Law Review Symposium, Power of Legal Storytelling, runs from 9 a.m. to 4:15 p.m. at 14 East Jackson Boulevard on the 8th floor in Chicago. Space is limited, in person and online. Visit eventbrite.com/e/33rd Annual DePaul Law Review Symposium for details. The Kerouac Project is now accepting applications for their 2024-2025 Writer-in-Residence positions. The Kerouac Project provides 6 residences per year to writers of any stripe or age living anywhere in the world. We encourage BIPOC and LGBTQ writers to apply. In the past, we have accepted writers with no formal writing education alongside those with MFAs and impressive resumes. You will be judged on the quality of the writing sample you submit. Each residency consists approximately of a 2-month stay at the cottage where Jack Kerouac wrote his novel, Dharma Bums. Utilities and a food stipend of $600 are included. Applications for the 2024-2025 Writer-in-Residence positions may be submitted from February 1st, 2024 to April 14th, 2024. 2024. Results will be announced in late May 2024. For guidelines and rules, visit kerouacproject.org. Miss the Chicago Writers Association Let's Just Write Writers Conference this year in Chicago? Don't miss the Southwest Michigan Writers Conference, with programs like creating characters that are rooted in passion, purpose, and place, and finding your creative zest, wooing your inner artist, and more. That's Saturday, April 27th, from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the Niles District Library Rotunda, 620 East Main Street, Niles, Michigan. Call 269-683-8545 or visit info@nileslibrary.net. Admission is free, but registration is required. This program is for ages 16 and up. Don't miss the West Side Book Fair Saturday, April 27. It begins at 11 a.m. at 1150 North Lamont Avenue in Chicago. This is an in-person event where you can explore a wide range of books from various genres. Whether you're a bookworm or just looking for a new read, this is the place to be. Don't miss out on the chance to discover hidden literary gems, meet fellow book enthusiasts, and even find your next favorite author. The West Side Book Fair features best-selling and award-winning authors Elena Kai, Bridget McGill, and Honey Thomas. The Art of Fiction and Creative Nonfiction: Essentials for Successful Writing at All Levels with workshop leader and worldwide author Lou Macaluso. That's at the Beverly Arts Center, 2407 West 111th Street in Chicago. The workshop is held on Thursdays from 7 to 9 p.m., except for 4th of July, between June 13 and August 15, 2024. Call 773-445-3838 or visit thebeverlyartscenter.com. The Beverly Arts Center. Imagine, discover, create. And kick off the summer with a fun-filled evening of captivating storytelling. The People's Legend, May 1st, at the Two Brothers Roundhouse in suburban Aurora, Illinois, with unique and compelling stories with folks across our communities. This series will feature storytellers and artists alike every first Wednesday of each month, with their first show April 3rd. Get your tickets and claim your seats in the tavern at 6 p.m. Storytelling showtime begins at 7 p.m. Typically, there will be six storytellers with one intermission. Music and mingling to wrap up the night, there is a $20 cover. Visit their website to find out how you can tell a story next month at the People's Legends. Visit Discover a Better You, LLC, at discoverabetteryou.com. Food and beverage service will be open through the evening, except when the stories are being told. This is an 18 and older show. And now, back to our guest. I absolutely love the idea of looking for cross-marketing opportunities.
Yeah, that's the best way. Yeah. I mean, I did that when I worked in cable advertising. I would like take, you know, I go to a piano store and I sold Blue's Clues, you know, the TV show, and they sold like their first piano to Michael Jordan. And I was like, you know, So I knew how to like sell things cross-marketing. And, you know, so I already am like working with, I'm lining up stores for the spring. And I already got one of the stores. I said, you're selling your corgi pillows, you know, let's get the dog in. And the funny thing is, the book and the dog are the people want to meet the dog. That's the funny thing. I'm like, do I need to get the dog an agent? Because literally people come in and my friend said, we're going to pitch the dog, pictures with the dog. So that's what we normally do, is we pitch pictures with the dog and then the book, which is at first annoying me because I'm like, I want to make some money. It doesn't matter, my friend says. It doesn't matter. Sell pictures with the dog and they'll buy the book. The kid will want a picture with the book and then the kid will beg for the book. Really, I hate to say it. That's how you do it, you know?
So in this hyper-competitive market for books and media and all of it, where you're literally competing for each individual's attention. I've spoken with many artists, from musicians to authors, about this very thing. It's essentially getting the product into the person's hand, or at least meeting them face to face. And then if you have that extra hook where you can take a photo, or I have a child take a photograph with Rhett, is
right.
You're creating a substantial emotional investment.
Yes.
Yeah.
You're getting them in the door of the store, of the book, you know, of the store is what you're doing.
Yeah.
And some of them say, I'm afraid I'm going to have such a huge crowd, I'm not going to be able to handle it. I'm like,
yeah.
Okay. You know what I mean? So, and I literally I'm trying to get like one of the big public libraries where I live. And so I managed to get in the name of the board of directors. So I'm going to pitch to him. So I'm doing my sales gig is what I'm doing. I'm going in and I'm pitching the guy on the board of directors and that kind of a thing. So
You've got that dog by your side. So I don't see how you can't help but win with that. How to create a main character that children love. There's a quote here: the best books have unique characters. They are quirky in some way. They have a funny habit. They look strange. They talk differently than everyone else. Rhett certainly has his own chatter, but John Fox offers a character checklist. What does the main character desire? What is the best and worst habit? Are they an extrovert or introvert? This doesn't necessarily apply to Rhett because he's a great dog.
Right.
He's different than everyone else. Cute sayings, repeated phrase word, etc. And I'll post a link to this article in the notes below. What makes a main character feel happy? Secret. So essentially, even for a children's book, and so I'd love Janet Sutherland Madden's thoughts on how you broke down Rhett's unique character into a narrative and made it happen.
It was one of those things where I sat down on my laptop and whipped it out.
Yeah.
Because I'm one of these people that'll be like, hold on. And I'll just pound it out. You know what I mean? I'm one of those writers that I'll just be like, I got this. And so with the nose over toes things, my dad's like, I'm trying to break down my journal. I said, okay. And I got on his laptop and I shot out his journal to me. I'm like, I got this. And I just, you know, and that's how I wrote it. So he's just, you know, that's, if I get an idea, I'll just pound it out. You know, I mean, I was a radio reporter. I did everything 30 seconds or less. So if I get an idea, I'll just pound it out, you know.
All the training.
Yeah. And that nose over toes, I wrote the beginning because I thought it could start as a movie. Because, you know, my left foot.
Yeah.
It started out really dramatic. And I thought nose over toes, I saw it as like a movie, you know, the wheelchair down the hallway. I swear that's how I saw it, you know.
You gotta write that screenplay. How to write the right length. I think I didn't count them all. You can tell me if I'm a little bit off here, but I figured between 850 and 1,000 words, which is meant to be shared between parents and kids, right? The sweet spot for you was that 4 to 8 year old demographic, but that's something that all authors should strive for to understand their audience, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And they can, you know, there's a lot of fun games to do and stuff, and really will help them with their English and their writing. And, you know, everyone wants a good writer, right?
Indeed. Indeed. So John Fox goes on to describe how to structure the plot, how to work with an illustrator, how to revise, how to publish. Let me ask you this, because there are some structural components unique structural components to writing a child's book that don't necessarily translate to adult narratives or even teenage narratives. But one of those is to start fast and end fast, which you do here. How much of that was intuitive to the story as you saw it, or were you kind of doing some research into those mechanical structural techniques?
I think it was how I saw it.
Okay.
Because I think there were times where I just kind of observed certain reactions.
Sure.
Because I watch it, you know, I watch him sometimes and I'm like, huh, okay, you know. Dogs are interesting, you know, how they respond.
So there's more here on how to work with an illustrator. You worked with a photographer.
Those were my pictures.
Oh, they are your pictures.
They're my pictures.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Great.
Yeah, because I was thinking long ahead. Yeah. I just was thinking long ahead. There might be a book, but I took pictures of him because he became our journey, you know?
John Fox also goes into how to revise and how to publish. Again, I'll post that in the links below. Now, to marketing. I've broken down the book marketing campaign into three segments or stages that people are probably just hearing here first. The pre-release, kind of a long, slow burn that builds to the release. It's newsletters, social media, while you're writing, without spoilers, maybe a genre or a specific research that you're doing, or just the journey that you're taking. We spoke about TikTok, pre-orders, pre-order offers.
Pre-orders, yes.
Building a marketing journal.
Right.
You've got extensive marketing experience. Do you have a marketing journal?
I have a marketing marketing plan that I've always used to build.
Okay.
To build, yeah, a regular marketing plan.
Is it a written plan, or is it just so second nature to you that you're able to?
It's a regular plan that I follow every time I do something. I work with Eckhart's on that, but then there's my regular marketing plan that I use every time I'm going to put together, let's say, a book signing or just,
yeah,
you know.
Is there a specific structure to that marketing plan that you found works better for keeping your marketing plan organized and
strategic? Yes. Yeah. The best plan, when I did some work for, let's say, Chet Kopic, when I helped him with some of his stuff, but then yeah. I used it for myself.
Yeah.
It's the social media, the Facebook page, the Instagram page, the social media, and then just the general, and then there was a general marketing plan for book signings, and then how to set up book signings, and then I kept a continual list of bookstores and my book contacts.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a set program that I used.
Okay. How important are metrics to you, and when do you start measuring those metrics?
Right away.
Yeah. Yeah.
At
the pre-release stage or at the release stage is it at the pre-release stage that you begin following those metrics?
At the pre-release stage.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. The second one is release. That's press releases, events, signings, placement, reader and peer reviews, or as is otherwise known as social proof, Amazon ads, book marketing sites like BookBub, Goodreads, and our good friends over at LitNuts. Are you breaking down your marketing strategy in this pre-release, release, and post-release sort of time frame?
I do the pre-release. It's a whole different marketing strategy. It's just the build up, the pre, you know, get ready, mark your calendar kind of a thing.
Okay.
You know, I work that with Eckhart, and then when, you know, then we release, let's see, even when I post on LinkedIn, you can see like who's looking, that kind of a thing.
Yeah.
And then when it's released, that there's whole different metrics and a whole different strategy for all of those. So
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so then when we sell, that's a whole nother thing, you know.
So you're in the post-release phase.
Yeah.
What have you done post-release to promote the book? And
post-release,
what's worked for?
Post-release now is all the book signings, because we're now in spring, you know, post-release, everything's kind of online, blah, blah, and you're kind of seeing how you're tracking online, and you're just kind of, I'll post pictures of Red and it's his birthday or Merry Christmas, blah, blah. You just kind of try to keep the interest on that kind of a thing. But now it's the spring. We're going to do some fun book signings and all that kind of stuff. And that's when it gets a little bit more full force. And then we'll do some story. We'll post some stories about that. And then that's when I will track and see how it's doing online and see how we're doing in terms of media attention. And and then we'll see how the sales are doing.
Can I suggest a red cam, maybe a little GoPro camera on his collar? We can follow him around everywhere he goes.
Oh, that's a good idea. right now it's the geese hunt. That's a good idea, because Brett Cam, all you do is watching the geese, man. It's just hilarious. I have him locked up now with this Kong, because he's woof, woof, woof. You know, he can hear the geese. Seriously. Yeah. All you'll see is eating him geese poo, but that's for your.
we've got a big 70-pound dog here that chased after the geese one time until he nearly caught one, and it turned around and pecked him really hard on the nose. And now he gives those geese a ton of respect.
Seriously?
Yes. She learned that they bite back.
Yeah. That's what my dog walker said. I said, he's going to go after the geese. He goes, nope. He looked at him, and the geese looked at them, and they just turned around. I said, seriously? Because I thought there was going to be a big vet bill. He said, nope. Yeah, you're right. There's a ton of like, dude. Let's leave each other alone.
We spend a lot of time in the forest preserve walking, and she was off the leash one day, and a deer, a big pointed buck came walking out of the trees, and she bolted after him. And I thought, oh, that's it. She's gonna take a ride in the sky, and she was too far to do anything about. They came, she stopped, they came nose to nose, and then she came back, and the buck sauntered off. But such is the life of a rescue dog, and a paws rescue dog. Janet Sutherland Madden's new book is Rhett, the Kind Little Corgi, from Eckhart's Press. A wonderful, wonderful book.
Thank you so much.
Her website is janetsutherlandmadden.com. For more information about brain aneurysms, the website is bafound, that's all one word, lowercase, .org. And her brilliant book of recovery, powerful book of recovery, is Nose Over Toes. Janet, thank you. This was brilliant.
This is great. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
It was such fun. And if you write another Brett book, please come back and talk about it. I would thoroughly enjoy that.
Yes, definitely.
All right, and maybe if that's what you're considering, we can talk and get an expert's perspective on marketing from that pre-release stage.
Sounds good.
With that, all right.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Janet.
Take care.
I'd like to thank my guest, Janet Sutherland Madden, and to all of you who listened. Please feel free to share this program with your social community. And just a reminder, now is the time to become a Chicago Writers Association member for just $25 per year and unlock a wealth of writers' resources by visiting chicagowrites.org. And by the way, a Chicago Writers Association membership makes a great gift. The Chicago Writers Association is a 501c3 charitable organization. Our theme song, Midnight Ride, is courtesy of Dino Olovchich. You can find Dino's music, just like this program, on Spotify. And that will do it for this episode of Chicago Writes, the podcast of the Chicago Writers Association. I'm your host, W.C. Turk.